How are international players affected by NIL rules differently? What is being done at UConn? Gabriella Levine, contributing writer at The Next, joins host Natalie Heverin to discuss her latest story about the NIL obstacles international players at UConn face.
Ogunbowale for the win.
You are Locked On Women's Basketball, your daily podcast on women's basketball.
Hello and happy Friday. You are Locked On to Women's Basketball. I'm Natalie Heverin, and I'm a features writer and the Atlantic 10 beat reporter for The Next. Thanks for making Locked On Women's Basketball your first listen every day. And remember, Locked On Women's Basketball is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. Today, we'll be discussing what NIL is, what unique obstacles international students face in relation to NIL, what UConn is doing, and what lies ahead in the field. Joining me today is Gabriella Levine, who is not only a litigation attorney, but also a contributing writer at The Next. So first off, thank you for joining me, Gabriella. And to start off, you know, 12% of NCAA college athletes consist of international students. But one area I haven't seen international students discussed in a lot is name, image, and likeness, NIL. So first, can you briefly define what NIL is?
Yeah, and thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. NIL literally means exactly what you just said. So it means name, image, and likeness. And I guess in simplest terms, it's a way for college athletes to profit off of who they are. Which is something that for years they could not do because the NCAA prevented them from doing it. So obviously in July 2021, that changed when the NCAA issued interim guidance saying for the first time, okay, you know, they waved the white flag and they said, all right, we're going to allow college athletes to profit off of who they are for the first time really in college sports. And for years, the NCAA basically stood by principles of amateurism. And for the NCAA, what that really meant was they wanted to draw a line between students in college and professional athletes. And they did not want students to be compensated in the same way that a professional athlete could. So at some point, I think in a lot of people think that NIL became a thing because of Supreme Court precedent. That's actually not true. In 2019, California was one of the first states to pass a law that said, you know, we're going to allow college athletes to profit, and any rule to the contrary isn't okay. And after that, you saw other states start to increasingly follow suit. And then we got to a Supreme Court decision in 2021 that did not directly address NIL, but sort of made it inexcusable for the NCAA not to embrace it. So shortly after that Supreme Court decision, as I said before, the NCAA came out with that guidance in July 2021 and said, all right, for the first time ever, we're going to allow it. And what that has meant in real time is that the bank is kind of open now for the first time for college athletes.
And, you know, can you also describe how NIL impacts international players and how that's different from domestic players or players born in the U.S.?
Yeah, so the typical NIL deal that we've come to know so far, and it's only been a couple of years, right, that this has been allowed. But so far, like take Paige, for example, right? She has an NIL deal with Gatorade. What does that mean? Gatorade is paying her directly, and she's doing things like shooting commercials with them that are getting promoted. She's got like a custom Gatorade bottle with them that is being sold on the open market, right? And she's being compensated to do that. And she's putting in a degree of work, right, to get that compensation. Right now, international college athletes can't do that. They can't do what Paige has been doing. They can't do what Angel Reese has been doing. They can't do really what any domestic college athlete can do, which is avail themselves of all of the full range, I guess I would call it, of what NIL opportunities are. Those major deals that we see, those major sponsorships that we see, they've been sort of left behind and excluded from that process. And it's not a problem that I think it's increasingly receiving a lot of attention, this issue, but it's not one that's relatively known on a wide scale. And the reason for it is because most of these college athletes are on, these international college athletes are on student visas. They're called F1 visas, and they prohibit them in most circumstances from engaging in work or employment while they're in the United States.
And what are some of the gray areas that exist right now in this area?
The whole thing is gray, basically. So when the NCAA opened the doors to NIL in July 2021, they said, international players can benefit. They had like these questions and answers that they published, and that was one of the answers that they gave, that, you know, international players could avail themselves of NIL benefits. What did that mean? Who knows? But it wasn't exactly, as we now know, wasn't true. So since that time, since July 2021, there hasn't been any guidance at any level, whether it's from the NCAA, whether it's from the Department of Homeland Security, whether it's from the federal government, what have you. It's been silent. It's been crickets on how international players can kind of operate in the NIL world as we now know it. And that has led to the gray area. There are no rules there that we know of when it comes to NIL and international players. There is no guidance right now out there on how they can operate. Part of the reason for that is the prohibition on an F1 visa holder from engaging in work, right, when they're in the United States, when they're at college, stems from a federal regulation. And that federal regulation was created way before NIL became a thing. It does not contemplate NIL in any way, shape, or form. And so the question that most often comes up is, when it comes to NIL, what is and what is not unauthorized work under an F1 visa? And there are now a lot of ideas and opinions on that, but there is no firm rule or regulation that gives us a definitive answer on that. And so I would describe it as international players are literally in legal limbo. No one quite knows what's okay and what's not in that space right now.
And taking a step back from international players in general, you touched a little bit on this in your story, but with multiple classes still eligible to use a fifth year or a COVID year, how does NIL or how could NIL impact their choices whether to declare for the WNBA draft or go play overseas professionally or stay in college for that fifth year?
Yeah, I think NIL just gives more choices than any college athlete ever had before, right? There was no way for college athletes before to profit in the same way that they can now. So what has that meant for women's basketball players in particular when it comes to the WNBA? We're increasingly seeing more and more talk about the pros and cons of staying for that extra year. You know, the COVID year is still a thing for a lot of athletes right now. Do you stay for that extra year and take advantage of opportunities that NIL might have given you? Or do you declare, you know, for the draft and do you turn pro and do you go to the WNBA? And so recently we saw Tamari Key is a great example, right, for Tennessee. She put a post out on Twitter and she said, I'm coming back for my fifth year. And here are the reasons. And she kind of outlined them. And she said, NIL has been good to her. It's been good to Power Five schools. It's given them, in her view, more than she could get by going to the WNBA now. So, you know, in her words, I think she described it as, you know, it's not guaranteed in the WNBA for really, you know, other than a select a small amount of players, I would say, it's not guaranteed that you're even going to get onto a roster, right? It's the rosters are super competitive, super congested, not guaranteed a roster spot. So you're not guaranteed a professional income right out of the gate in the WNBA. And when you get, you know, a rookie contract, the numbers aren't, you know, amazing, right? I think the range for your first 3 years as a rookie in the WNBA is somewhere between like 57,000 and 68, or maybe in the 70s, but it's not terribly high. And there are college athletes right now in the NCAA who are making more money than that from their dorm room. So NIL gives a college player right now the option to say, no, I'm going to stay that extra year and I'm going to take advantage of the opportunities available to me. And it's not just money, right? It's not just the ability to earn financially. It's the ability to build brands. Like Haley Jones, you know, Stanford, she's a great example of that. She built her brand when she was in college. And she sort of learned, and she's spoken about this, how to financially manage a brand and what goes into that. And NIL has kind of given her that opportunity to do so. You know, and you could get an extra degree, right, for free. And so I think that NIL gives that range of flexibility and options that athletes didn't have before, but international players don't have those options right now, right? They can't look at it and say, I've got a pool of money sitting here available to me in college, like a domestic player can, and say, well, I'm going to stay my COVID year because it's going to be more lucrative for me to do so than turning pro.
All great information. And coming up next, we'll dive in a little bit deeper and talk about how these regulations impact specifically UConn's international players. Today's episode is brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's Most Electric Player of the Week is brought to you by the all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya. This week's player is not a single player or even a single team because, well, it's March Madness. So instead, it is Miami and Mississippi, who both upset one seeds in the second round. Both teams had incredibly electric performances and are heading to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 1992 and 2007, respectively. This is also the first time two number one seeds didn't make the Sweet 16 since 1998. Much like the Nissan Ariya, these teams were brilliantly fierce and both teams are making historic runs. Mississippi and Miami, like the Ariya, deliver on duality, and the vehicle is the perfect combination of fierceness and elegance, beautiful but strong, the perfect SUV crossover. The 2023 Nissan Ariya packs pin you to your seat power and premium intelligence all in one EV. The all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya is the EV for people who love to drive. Shop now at NissanUSA.com. So UConn has five international players who are currently playing. Ika Mule from Croatia, Aaliyah Edwards from Canada, Lou Lopez Senechal from France, who's originally from Mexico, Dorca Juhas from Hungary, and Ines Benacourt from Portugal, as well as Jana El Afi from Egypt, who joined the team midseason. What have been the contributions from their international players for UConn so far this season as we head into the second weekend of March Madness?
I think that they're dominating. And I think that they're dominating at a level, both collectively and individually, that does not exist on any other team in Division I women's basketball right now, and maybe even on the men's side too. They, four out of the six of them have been in the starting lineup basically for the entire season, right? When you look at the regular season stats, they're each individually averaging more minutes than any of their domestic counterparts. And their on-court contributions have been really exceptional, right? They've kind of been, we all know now the story of what UConn went through this year. It's injury after injury after injury, including some of those international players, right? But during, the black cloud, throughout that black cloud that hovered over stores for the entire season, they are the ones that really remained very, very consistent. And what we've sort of seen the fruits of that. So Aaliyah Edwards right now, she's from Canada. She's the only international player on all three AP All-American teams. She's the only international player that's a candidate for, the Wooden Award. She's really on an island unto herself right now when it comes to that. And they've all sort of stood out, on a national scale, like Nika Mule. She broke Sue Bird's single season assist record, right, for at least for the program. She's the only, international player on the Nancy Lieberman list right now for point guards. Lou Lopez Seneschal, I mean, I don't know if anyone in college basketball has her story this year, right? Like Lou from the MAC, from Fairfield, came in and dominated for UConn, carried them through a lot of their season on the biggest stage in Division I basketball. Dorky Yuha, she averaged, a double-double on the season. So on the court, they've been, like I said before, absolutely dominant. Off the court, though, the very unique thing about UConn that we're seeing playing out on this issue, I don't think that there's another team where you've got that type of disparity within it, where you've got players like Paige and AZ who have earned their success, right, in the NIL space. They're doing pretty good. I think we can all agree, right? Paige, I think Forbes estimated last year that she was at or about to exceed 1 million in endorsements. I wouldn't be surprised at this point if she's done so. So you've got some players who have been super successful in this space. And then on the flip side, you've got half of your team who's international players. And, I think, do we know for certain that all six are on F1 visas? No, we don't. That's not something that's typically subject to public disclosure, right? But based on the things that the players have said, based on the things that the coach has said, based on the fact that their social media accounts have been largely or really totally silent when it comes to NIL promotions, I think it's fair to say that they, most of them, if not all of them, have really been locked out of all the full range of the NIL opportunities that are available to them. And it's not, Gino made a great point about this after their game against Vermont, on this issue. And what he said was, there's always going to be a disparity on your team when it comes to NIL. Some players are always going to profit more so than others, right? That's just sort of the nature of the beast. And I think that that's 110% true. The distinction for international players is that you can't tell me that brands and companies out there don't want to invest in Aaliyah in the way that she's played this season on the court. Same for Nika, same for Dorka, same for Lou. So even if NIL players out there want to invest in these international athletes, they can't do so. And the athletes in the same vein can't take advantage of those options in the same way that Paige can, in the same way that AZ can. So I think it's a really unique situation. And it's, when you think about it, none of them really knew, right, when they were recruited that NIL was even an option, at the outset. And then they've come here and now all of a sudden, they came here, right, in their eyes for college education. and to play basketball. And now there's this third thing, you know, in the mix that they can't have fully in the same way that American players can.
And you talk about UConn being in a unique situation, but one thing that I learned about from your story was that, you know, UConn started an NIL store. So can you break that down a little bit and also explain how that helps international students while still remaining legal and okay to do in the way that maybe you talked about most traditional NIL deals aren't currently okay for them to do?
Yeah. So what UConn did in this gray area is I think they really educated themselves on ways to get around that prohibition on unauthorized employment that is inherent in any F1 visa. So what they did is they formed partnerships with different online platforms, and the UConn NIL store is one of them. It's powered by Campus Inc. Campus Inc. is a company that's been around for a really long time. They've made like college apparel, you know, they've made apparel for like fraternities, sororities, things of that nature. But when NIL became a thing, they started to make officially licensed merchandise and apparel for college athletes. So what UConn did is they formed a partnership with the UConn NIL store, which is literally a store online, right, that anyone can go to. And UConn's men's and women's basketball players each have individual lockers on the store. So if you buy merchandise in Nika's locker right now, so she's got like custom made t-shirts, she's got, you know, her jersey, she's got other gear out there with her name and her number on it. Any sale of any item on that platform nets the athlete a return. So if you buy one jersey for Paige, right, it's according to how they say it works, it nets that athlete anywhere between $6 and I think it's $15 on that sale. So it's putting money directly into the athlete's pocket for any sale of merchandise that occurs on their platform. And the UConn NIL store is not the only platform that UConn has partnered with. There are others out there. But the way that they kind of work this out when it comes to international players is they view it as what's called passive income. So in the gray area, right, in which most students, most schools, and most lawyers operate in NIL, it's generally understood that if an international player is doing something in exchange for something, that is generally, right, unauthorized work. But with passive income, an international player isn't doing anything at all. So if the UConn NIL store puts out a shirt for Aaliyah, right, and it's got her face on it, it's got her name on it, but Aaliyah doesn't contribute in any way, shape, or form to that shirt. She doesn't contribute to its design. She doesn't promote it on social media. She doesn't post it. She's not doing anything of that nature except receiving a passive benefit in return for it, which is just money coming to her by virtue of the sale. Then UConn has said, all right, we feel reasonably comfortable in interpreting that as passive income and not active work. And if it's passive income, then it wouldn't run afoul of that F1 prohibition on active work. And I think it's really unique. And I think it's you're going to see schools take advantage of that option more and more. And, you know, do I think that it's netting these international players the same amount of money that Paige is getting from, you know, Gatorade, or AZ's getting from the Curry brand or anything like that? No, I don't think so, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And it's showing that schools are looking at this and they're saying, we think it's important to include these athletes, and we're going to be creative in figuring out ways to do so.
All really great information. And coming up next, we'll talk about what the NIL future holds for student athletes. So you wrote that imminent regulatory change is on the horizon for international student athletes when it comes to NIL. What are some reasons for this, and what are you expecting to see in those regulatory changes?
It's a really good question. Really, the reason that there's nothing on the horizon in terms of a regulatory change, because we talked about before, the rule that says an F1 visa holder can't engage in work unless it's under very limited circumstances is a federal regulation. Changing a federal regulation generally takes a really long time. It takes years. Changing a federal regulation on a hot button political topic where there's a lot of political divide, like in immigration policy, is even harder. So that alone makes it, I think it's an uphill battle, right? You know, like Gino after the game, I asked him, what do you think of the fact that these rules haven't changed in the 2 years that NIL has been an option? And he basically said, do I think it's going to change? I doubt it. Do I think the rules are going to change? I doubt it. And he might be right. I hope he's wrong. I hope that it gets the level of attention that it deserves at the federal level to inspire a regulatory change. But you've also got to keep in mind, you know, and he made this point, that's a rule that applies to every college student on an F1 visa. It doesn't just apply to athletes. So in my view, just from a legal perspective, I think it's going to be really hard to create an exception and a carve out just for athletes and not for any other student on an F1 visa. You can kind of try to imagine, well, what other students could avail themselves of similar like NIL options? Maybe like a social media influencer or someone like that who wants to have like brand partnerships. She's not an athlete. She's just a student. Maybe that's a person that situation could apply to. So that makes it hard too. And then the final reason is really, it's a minority problem right now. The number I think that most of us agree on is 12% of all athletes across the NCAA are international. And within that 12%, I think it's an even smaller number of those who are acutely impacted by this problem. So obviously we know that it's impacting UConn. It's impacted some other really prominent players on the men's and women's side. So like Kentucky had a player on its roster that had impacted that, you know, Oscar Shoebite, right? We knew of his situation. But by and large, I think it's a problem that affects a very small amount of athletes at the end of the day. And so I don't think you're going to see large scale change until more eyes and more attention is drawn to the issue, despite the fact that it only affects a minority.
And we've talked a lot about the challenges that are facing, and I don't want to call this a loophole, but there is a tiny ray of sunshine sticking out from the clouds. Can you talk about how international players can explore NIL opportunities if they're not in the United States?
Yes. So, you know, I don't think we've seen how that option can play out in real time on a large scale, just because NIL is so new. And so I think it's evolving. And I don't think we've seen a lot of international players out there go home, you know, during the summer or during a break and, you know, make a ton of NIL money. There's, you know, one example, right? The Kentucky men's team played tournament in the Bahamas, like exhibition games. And their star international player, when he got there, did a bunch of promotions with brands who were on the ground, and he made like something crazy, like, I don't know, $500,000 or something like that while he was there. generally speaking, immigration lawyers right now are saying, we think that's okay. If you're not in the United States, right? If you're not engaging in action in the United States, that's in exchange for money, right? We think that's okay. So how could that kind of play out? Like maybe you could have a situation where Nika goes home to Croatia, right? And the Players Tribune says, well, we think she's someone that we want to hear from and we want her to write for us in some way. And Nika writes everything on her computer in Croatia, right? And she posts everything from her computer in Croatia. And all of the activity to get whatever it is that the Players Tribune is going to give her in exchange for doing that occurs in Croatia. She doesn't do a single thing when she's in the States. She doesn't write. She doesn't post about it. She doesn't promote it in any way. Generally speaking, I think most immigration lawyers right now and most schools right now are probably going to say, we think that that's an option that you can avail yourself of. And Gino himself said it, you know, after the Vermont game, he said, they can take advantage. They just can't do it in the United States. Do I think that it's going to be really challenging for players to do that? Yeah. I mean, they're not home often, you know, and it's going to require unique deals. Like you're going to need companies and brands that have an international presence that are going to be willing to work with you outside of the States to make that happen. But it's certainly an option that's on the table.
And what do you expect to see in the future? And what are Amy Maldonado and fellow immigration attorney Ksenia Moravio, who you talked about in your story, doing in the interim to try to find any work around these difficult issues?
Yeah, so I think what we're going to increasingly see, and I think UConn was sort of at the front of the pack in this, is that schools and lawyers are going to continue to push the envelope on this issue. And they're going to try to get more options for international student athletes competing here. And so some lawyers right now, like Amy, like Ksenia, they're out there actively exploring whether you can change the visa status for a student athlete. So there are work visas, right, that are available. And some of them that could conceivably apply to a college player are professional visas, P1 visas, and O1 visas. And those attorneys and a lot of attorneys and even schools, frankly, are now saying, okay, can we potentially change the status from F1 to, say, a professional visa, which would allow that college player to take advantage of the full range of NIL opportunities without any prohibition within their visa on work. I'm not personally aware of any instance in which a professional visa has been obtained for a college athlete to benefit from NIL. I know that there's at least one reported instance of an O-1 visa being attained for like a one-armed basketball player. They're really hard to get though. They're not easy. And so I think it will be dependent on the circumstances, right? If you're someone like a player at UConn who's on the biggest stage, you've got more eyes on you than most other places in women's college basketball, you're dominating on the court. I think, if the juice is worth the squeeze, right? If your options and your opportunity are elevated enough where it could be worth it to pursue that avenue of changing a visa, I think that schools are going to increasingly look at it for those types of players. Do I think it's going to become a wholesale thing for all international players across the board in the NCAA? No, I think it's going to be dependent on the player. I think it's going to be dependent on their individual circumstances and whether they can attain, whether they even meet their criteria to obtain one of those visas, and whether, you know, the market that they're in makes it worth trying.
Thank you so much, Gabriella, for joining me today and helping me break down some of these difficult and very nuanced issues around NIL. Where can the people find you and your work?
You can find me on Twitter at GabRoseOne or the next.
Thank you for making Locked On Women's Basketball your first listen today. Make sure to tune back in tomorrow to hear more from Hunter and Em, who always teach me so much about all things WNBA draft related. Now make your second listen Game to Game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA, available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts.